today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
You know, Patrick, we can't do this show all by ourselves.
Oh, no, not at all, Jim. It takes a village to rock the suburbs.
So a couple weeks ago, I think it was, maybe something like that, we had a couple of episodes called Meet the Interns.
Yeah, weren't those great? Yep, that was so cool.
It was great fun. We had intern Matt on a call from California, and we had intern Sammy, also from California, on a call.
She's great.
And they just, you know, kind of talked about how much they love music and what they like about music, and we got to hear some Foreigner that, so that was fun.
Sammy's never going to live that one down.
And then we want to continue that series today. We have another Meet the Intern call, and we also have an in-studio intern.
Yes, today intern Sam is here too.
IRL.
Intern Sam. So the whole team, we got the whole team,
it's great.
You know, represented in some way. So this show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I mentioned intern Sam Lisker is here as well.
That's right.
And we would not be able to do this show without the help of so many people. It takes a village to produce this
show,
right?
Yep.
And so today you're going to meet yet another member of Team Suburbs Pod, and that would be John Rossman. John.
Gentlemen.
How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
And where are you?
I'm up in this little hamlet called Eldersburg, Maryland. It's by Sykesville. I tell people, if you know where Columbia, Maryland is, keep going north.
Okay, I know where
you'll
that
get
is.
There eventually. Yep.
People would know Columbia because that's where Meriwether Post Pavilion is,
right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
That's how
right.
I know it.
Yeah. I've been there several times, and we'll
be
there
again. Have you guys been since they replaced the roof?
No.
Have not.
I don't think so.
No, I have not. I was there last summer when someone was kind of showing me around and telling me what the plans were, but I haven't seen it. And they're going to put seats up there or something crazy like that, right? Sky seats is like some idea they're going to have. Yeah.
What?
Yes, this is a true thing.
I saw Jason Isbell there last week.
Oh, wow. How was that
and
show?
Father John Misty. Father John Misty blew me away.
Oh, wow.
That was incredible. Jason Isbell is one of my favorite artists, but he wasn't bringing it that night. That was my first time at Meriwether since they replaced the roof and added seating up above the normal seating there. It looks incredible.
I bet.
Great.
Yeah.
I know I was really worried whenever I heard that the whole roof collapsed because that's a pretty iconic venue.
Yes.
I've seen a lot of great shows there. And, you know, it's not a cheap thing to replace a roof in a venue like that.
No, not small.
But they've done a great job. If you had never been there before, you would never know.
Oh, wow.
And it looks even better.
That's great. Certainly, it is an iconic venue, and the only time The Who and Led Zeppelin ever played together took place
at
Meriwether Post Pavilion. Yes, we learned that in our Led Zeppelin rabbit hole that we went down for a little while there.
So anyway, so John is in that area of the country.
We've established that.
Yes.
That's right.
And tell us a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up in that area? And also, like, what do you do for a living, and what's your interest in music? All that.
Well, I actually grew up in a little town called Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, which is kind of on the southern border of Pennsylvania near Hagerstown, Maryland. And everyone who lives in Waynesboro goes to, if they go to college, they go to Penn State. Everybody in Pennsylvania goes to Penn State. So I had to be different, and I went to the University of Maryland and then transferred up to UMBC in the early 2000s to do their music technology and recording program. So from there, that's right outside of Baltimore, Maryland. So I got an apartment in Baltimore, lived there for about 10 years, and then decided that city life was not for me anymore. And so, as my parents are fond of saying, the last 5 years have just been a slow process of me slowly moving back towards Waynesboro. So I'm back out in the country, kind of in the suburbs in the middle of nowhere. But that suits us.
Okay.
But
And you mentioned the recording technology stuff. So this is interesting to us, of course, because I think John knows more than we do.
I don't know about that.
I think he does have some deep knowledge there.
Oh, yeah.
So he's a great asset to
our team. Absolutely. John, we so appreciate the help you give, the insight and all the suggestions. And certainly we love it that, you know, you pitch in, as all of us do, to the newsletter. That you can sign up for. So it's just wonderful to have John as part of this team.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's a lot of fun.
It's great. So John also has his own podcast too.
Yes,
is that right, John?
He does.
Yeah. It's called You Should Check It Out. But if you go to check it out, you're not going to find it. We're in the middle of a reboot process right now.
Okay.
Yeah, we started 2 years ago. Me and my best friend Nick Klein, mm-hmm. Who I grew up with back in Waynesboro, and we've just always kind of talked music. So we had the idea, well, why don't we just have a show about music? Mm-hmm. And we started with the idea of doing these long form episodes of, you know, each of us would take an album that he likes for whatever reason and just explain it. And we produced some episodes that were 2 hours long. And,
wow.
You know, I got into editing them and I hadn't really done too much linear editing for podcasts. So it was a slog. We did 10 episodes and I have them all done now, but we just kind of weren't really satisfied with them. So that's when I started looking for a podcast to edit for, to be quite honest with you. That's how
nice.
I found you guys.
Interesting.
And just to get practice, really, because I didn't have enough material on my own to do. And a funny story, I threw out a bunch of resumes, and all I had seen were these business podcasts that were like, integrate your success vertical, you know, with Rob Smiley or whatever. And they all liked my resume, so I got like 5 offers to do internships with them, and thank God you guys emailed me back. And I was like, all right, this is great. These guys are on my wavelength, and I'll be actually dealing with something I enjoy. So
nice.
Oh, that's so cool. That's such a great story.
So does the fact that we're doing this daily, does that give you enough practice?
Oh yeah. You guys are machines, man. I don't know how you do it. You know, it's all that I can do to get my 2 other hosts on the mic once a week. You know, I don't know how you guys do it and keep a work life and a personal life. I assume you guys do have
personal lives. Most of the time.
Yeah. That's in quotes.
Yeah. I'm going to a soccer match tonight.
Oh,
so I do
go.
Get to do,
I am
do some things once in a while. But okay, so let's get into music here,
sure.
John. I can see you on the video of this call on my computer screen. I can see guitars behind you, including
a
Rickenbacker.
That's my Rick 620.
Wow, look at that.
That's my baby.
Really
that's
nice.
Awesome.
So there's a couple of guitars back there. There is a keyboard. I see. Yeah, Telecaster. There's a keyboard. There's some, looks like sheet music, some Led Zeppelin sheet music,
nice.
I think. There's a Frank Zappa poster. So tell us, what kind of music do you like?
Well, all that stuff.
I think there's a banjo behind you, too.
Yeah, the banjo. That was my Father's Day gift last year.
Oh,
my
wow.
First Father's Day.
Oh,
that's
awesome.
Cool.
And that's been incredible. And that's one of those things. It was, I've been playing guitar since I was 12. So, how hard can banjo be?
Yeah.
it's a completely different instrument.
It is.
It's a completely different discipline, but I love it. I've kind of really fallen in love with playing the banjo.
Nice.
That's cool.
Yeah. 5-string banjo?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. Earl Scruggs style.
Yeah, a little claw hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Earl Scruggs is 3-finger. I'm sorry. I wouldn't have corrected you before, but now I know all the details.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Of this.
That's
Earl
what
Scruggs
I'm thinking of. Who am I thinking
finger.
Of? Yeah. I'm thinking of...
Clawhammer's like the old style. Though.
Yeah, like Ralph Stanley or something like that.
Yeah. So as far as music goes, I mean, I like rock. Americana is kind of the roots rock, but I also like a lot of heavy stuff. I love Zappa. Nick, the guy who I host the podcast with, he and I bonded over Zappa many years ago.
Oh, nice.
And I like alternative. I've been on a really big bluegrass and... kind of more folk type music kick. Love Dylan, the Beatles. I'm a huge Stones fan. Tom Waits, Beastie Boys, Ryan Adams.
Good eclectic mix
John, what's your favorite period of the Stones? I've been reading about them kind of recently, and I just found another book when I was down in Nashville, so I'm really anxious to read it. But this one I just found is more focused on like 78 to like 85.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an interesting period.
It is.
I mean, my favorite is the classic period. I like the Mick Taylor years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, Exile. But I actually really like, I guess if I was a weirdo in some way was, as far as the Stones are concerned, it would be mid-70s Stones.
Oh, okay.
Like the first Ron Wood album, Black and Blue.
Yep, that's a good album.
I love that album. Mm-hmm. Nobody else loves that.
Underrated.
It's kind of a weird one. Mm-hmm. One of my first long-term girlfriends, we took a trip to Italy, and we drove around Sicily, and that was the album that I had on the background. So I can always remember.
That's cool. Know,
just driving along the coastline in Sicily, listening to Black and Blue.
Yeah, so. There's some great cuts on that record. They get into a little reggae stylings on that platter, too. It's cool.
Discussed before, the Rolling Stones have put out, like, even their lesser work is still pretty great.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's,
yeah,
it's really quite an amazing catalog that they have. Yeah,
it really is.
I want to talk about Frank Zappa for a minute here too, because I don't think we've ever had anyone on the show mention Frank Zappa.
Not really.
An artist that we've ever really talked about at all.
Really?
So So tell us, how did you get into Frank Zappa?
Well, that's a good question. The real Frank Zappa book, I think, is where it was before I actually got into his music. I know my dad had a couple tapes, like cassette tapes, laying around that I probably listened to and didn't really understand or get whenever I was a kid. And I just, you know, he was just the weird guy. But then somehow I ran across a copy of the real Frank Zappa book, which was kind of his autobiography that he wrote, I think, 89, 88, 89, mm-hmm. something like that. And it's just hilarious. I mean, even if you don't like Frank Zappa at all, I mean, just the stories he tells, the his views on the world kind of really shaped a lot of the things I believe in and espouse today, you know, about self-reliance and, you know, doing it yourself and working hard. So,
yeah.
So that's, I think that's where it started. But then the album that really sold me on him was Live at the Roxy.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't know if you guys have ever heard or not, but it's an incredible, incredible live album recorded in 1972, I think, at the Roxy. Mm-hmm. And so they're playing, in my opinion, the best version of the Frank Zappa Band with Napoleon Murphy Brock.
Yeah.
It's like his first tour on it. Just an incredible ensemble. And they do these great arrangements of songs that you've never heard of before. And they're just, it's very jazzy and it's very eclectic. And from there, Frank Zappa has so many different styles and types.
He really does, yeah.
And there's some stuff of his that I really don't care for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Bobby Brown Goes Down. You know, kind of the songs that the big, quote-unquote, hits of Frank Zappa I'm not a real big fan of.
Right.
But his mid-70s bands were just off the charts good. And I like his ethos as much as his music almost.
Yeah, certainly there's a lot to be said for that. And also his, you know, I think, as you said, his role in shaping others, you know, not directly associated with his music. Certainly Captain Beefheart comes to mind. There's a lot of people that he sort of shepherded through. And then, you know, I think it's important to remember the work, eloquent and intelligent work he did against the Parents Music Resource Center when Tipper Gore was trying to label albums and censor music.
Absolutely.
He was really at the forefront of that. He was so smart and so eloquent, and he went on so many shows.
That's
and he
right.
appeared before Congress and debated, and he was just amazing
that
at
was
that
right.
time.
He also was sort of a pioneer in kind of like direct to the fan distribution, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't he do a lot of his releases by like mail order?
The whole Bizarre Straight thing, you know, he had a special relationship with, I think it was Warner Brothers that allowed him to do a lot of very interesting stuff too. So I love the instrumental stuff. I know a couple guys that are huge Zappa fans, but they kind of got me into like the shut up and play your guitar stuff, right. Which is cool too.
He also released something like 65 albums during his lifetime.
Amazing. Yeah.
And that's not even scratching the surface of what's out there.
Right, what he actually
recorded. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Alex Winter, the I think that's either Bill or Ted from the Bill and Ted movies.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a huge Zappa fan, it turns out.
Oh, I did not.
Yeah, and he started a Kickstarter, I think it's 3 years ago now. And it's called Who the F is Frank Zappa. And it was basically trying to raise enough money to digitize and catalog all of the remaining music, film, pictures, all the media that's left in the Frank Zappa archive.
Wow.
Which was basically in the basement of his house in California. So they saved it. You know, they raised enough money, way more than they needed. You know? All the Zappa fans came out of the woodwork. And they're coming to the end of that project now. So every once in a while, I'll get an email from Alex Winter saying, you know, here's a new batch of stuff, you know, enjoy.
Wow, that's incredible.
That's been really neat.
I had no idea.
Huh.
Yeah.
Something.
It is neat.
Now, do you play in bands and stuff like that, John?
Yeah. Not as much as I used to, that's for sure, now that I have a kid. But yeah, that's always been something that's really been important to me. I started playing in bands in high school, doing original music and some covers. And then, I worked at a music store whenever I first moved to Baltimore. So I had about 5 bands going back then, just playing in around Baltimore, cover bands. I played in a Black Crowes tribute band called Nonfiction.
Oh, yeah.
For about 4 years. We toured up and down the East Coast. So that was really neat.
What was it called?
It was called Nonfiction, a tribute to the Black Crowes.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, you can look us up on SoundCloud. But we're not making any new music these days. Yeah, I actually started on bass in that band and then moved to guitar.
Did you ever play the State Theater in Falls Church, Virginia?
No, never made it down there. No.
They have a lot of tribute bands.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would have been great to know back then.
Tons and tons.
It's tough to find venues that will support a 9-person band.
Wow.
You know, the original Crowes lineup is 5 people. So we had all that. And then we had backing vocalists, too.
Cool.
And it's just, it's not easy to make enough money to keep people happy, honestly.
Yeah, split it that way. That must have been a lot of fun to do, though. It sounds like
it was a blast.
Big band.
It was a blast, yeah. Towards the end of it, I was playing the Rich Robinson part. And I don't know if you know this about him, but he's the rhythm guitar player for the Black Crowes. And he plays in all these open tunings, typically open G, like Keith Richards.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I got that. But then he also plays in open F. Hmm. He plays in open C. He plays in drop D. He plays in all these. When you're playing in a performance band, you have to have a guitar for each one of those tunings.
Right.
So you're carrying like 7 stinking guitars to each show.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but it was a lot of fun.
It's like Sonic Youth.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you just take them off your wall behind you and you go play the show, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The pink telly back there was the, that was the standard open G one.
Okay.
That pissed everybody off because nobody likes pink guitars for some reason. I actually got that guitar. I'm sorry, guys. I'm nerding out on this stuff, but I got that guitar in Montana. And it's a pink Paisley Telecaster, and you can't find them on the East Coast at all, but I don't think anybody wanted a pink guitar in Montana.
So. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I think Mike Wagner is going to have something to say about this pink Telecaster. We'll wait to see.
What's the first album you ever bought?
That would have to be Super Unknown by Soundgarden.
I split that
with my friend Will from down the street. We bought it on cassette.
Nice.
And I remember that we rode our bikes down to Kmart, and we rode back, and every song we switched off. We didn't have a headphone splitter or anything like that. So.
You get a song, I get a song.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
A great story.
And I got Spoon Man, man. That, I used to love that song.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's cool.
Great album.
That's a great story. And what is the first concert you ever went to?
Oh, God. I was afraid you guys were going to ask me. My first concert, I should say this without a hint of being embarrassed. It's Hootie and the Blowfish.
All right.
Was my first concert.
There you go.
No shame.
Hershey Park that's Stadium, oh, Hershey Park sweet. Arena. Yeah.
Nice.
My mom drove us up there. That was a good time.
Oh, that's really cool.
It was a great show.
I think that maybe it's a little lost all these years later how huge they were.
Oh, yeah.
For that
Cracked Rear View.
For that
like
period of time.
One of the highest selling albums you'll ever find. Yeah.
In fact, Darius Rucker is mad. Do you hear about this controversy? He's really upset because Hootie and the Blowfish were not included in some recent like documentary series about the 90s.
Oh, is that right?
You know, and there were like all these other bands that were in there. It wasn't just about music. It was about like, you know, sort of 90s history in general, right?
Was it on CNN?
I think it was. It was the CNN one. It was co-produced
one of those
by
decades.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those decades. I love that series.
He's specifically mad at Tom Hanks, apparently. He's calling out Tom Hanks.
Oh, is that right?
Boy.
Wow.
How can you do this whole series and about the 90s and not include Hootie and the Blowfish?
Someone's ego was touched a little bit.
Yeah.
That's funny.
As of May 21st, 2018, it sold 21 million copies in the United States. It sold 3 million copies through Columbia House alone.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Man.
Amazing.
What's funny about that is, you know, they're on their like reunion tour this summer.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and they're actually playing Hershey Park Arena.
Oh, no way. Like, that's so cool.
This would be cool. I could recreate my first concert, right?
That would be
the
great.
Stinking tickets were like $150 starting there.
Sorry, guys. I hope you get a ticket to the park for that much, man. That's crazy.
The laugh that don't seem like yesterday. Then you let the white horse come and take you away. They came to get you. It was cold black. The wheels were in motion. There was no turning back. Running from an angel. Running to the devil. Devil, yeah. Running from
So, John, it's really great to finally talk to you in person. I know we've communicated over text a lot and over our Slack when it comes to working behind the scenes on the show. So I guess one of my other questions would be, what got you into playing guitar? Because you sort of talk about that phase in your life, but I want to know what got you into just playing the instrument?
Good question. Two things. Mm-hmm. First was a moment I remember really, really distinctly, and that's also going to age me, but I was in Potomac Mills Mall in December shopping with my family Christmas gifts, and Eric Clapton had just come out with the Unplugged album.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like 91.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the song Layla, the Unplugged version, I just remember staring at this huge TV and seeing that, and just that was just the coolest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh,
so,
wow. That's neat.
And my mom's sister, my aunt Patty, she's a folk musician, and she plays the banjo. She actually does play clawhammer-style banjo.
Oh, wow.
And mandolin and guitar. And so it's in our family. My mom, my father, they don't play any instruments, but, you know, they sing in church and certainly encouraged us to play instruments. And so I knew that I had someone who could teach me what to do. And I knew that there were some guitars laying around the house. So, yeah, started on nylon string guitar and didn't sound anything like Eric Clapton.
He's a legend for sure. But, yeah, that MTV Unplugged series is just phenomenal. And, yeah, that version of Layla is legendary. It's really, it blew everybody away when it came out and when it happened. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just want to point out here that Sam, of course, is head of the interns.
Yes, he is.
Which means, John, he'll be doing your performance review.
Absolutely.
That'll be coming
John,
up.
John, you're doing a great job.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Sam. I appreciate that. Same. Right back at you.
Thank you.
We may be able to double your salary based on that review.
Yes.
Right. Perfect.
We did send John some stuff late.
Oh, of course.
Pretty
recently,
yeah. Right? I got my mug and my t-shirt, and I got my cassette.
Nice.
So, yeah. Yeah,
very fantastic. Cool. The mixtape. I love that. Such a cool idea.
Thank you. Could you actually play the cassette? Do you still have that Walkman from when
still
you got the
when you
had the Soundgarden tape? Yeah.
I think I'm gonna have to break out. I have a Tascam 4-track.
All right, sweet. That's a good one.
Yeah,
I have not pressed play on that for years.
Yeah,
but I suppose it could work.
Fingers crossed.
That was the machine that Wingtip Sloat cut its teeth on. We recorded our early stuff on a Tascam 4-track. Our nickname for it was Satan, because it had a habit of erasing some of our tracks at certain times. Yeah, unknown to us. But great machine.
I keep hearing you talk about Wingtip Sloat. I assume that's your band.
That is my band, yeah.
Are any recordings available?
Yes, they are.
The
I will get
you
some.
Could you tell us where to find them?
How many copies do you need, John? A box will be headed your way very soon. You just said the magic words. Yes,
are there any recordings available? Once every 20 years, release a record. But it's mammoth in scope and size. It's 20 years worth of material at once. Yeah.
Talk about bang for your buck. We're doing a much better job than Hootie and the Blowfish.
I mean, how many tracks were on that combined record and CD that you just put out?
A grand total of 41 on the vinyl and the CD altogether. Yeah.
It's a great deal. Seriously.
Yeah, it really is. Per track, the value. You know how you go to the grocery store per ounce? This is how much you're paying. It's a fantastic deal.
And so the next release is penciled in for 2039 or something
That's
like that?
Yep.
Okay, all right. Mm-hmm.
Right around Christmas season, we're going to hope to make the 2039
Perfect.
Christmas season.
Just in time
season.
For the holidays.
That's right, yeah.
Mark that down on your calendars, folks.
That's
all right.
Right. All right.
I'm sorry, Jim, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
but
go ahead.
I saw a perfect opening to plug my current band.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my friend Kreshmir and my friend Nick, who I do the podcast with, who's a fantastic drummer. We have a band, it's called Sleepers, and we recorded an album about 4 years ago and released it on vinyl.
Fantastic.
It was a big deal. And then my friend Kreshmir immediately moved to California. And so I was like, ugh, man, who am I going to make music with? And that's when the whole Black Crowes tribute band started up. I just needed something to do. But
and
now Kreshmir has moved back. He has moved back to Maryland.
Does that
so
mean
Sleepers is revived.
All right. What is the name of the record, John?
Well, the original album was called Sleepers. It's our eponymous debut.
Okay.
But the next one, we don't have a name for it yet. We're still in the studio, if you will.
So you're working on that now?
Yeah. We're just demoing some tracks.
Okay. So it'll come out before 2039.
Maybe. We'll see. Well, at the rate we're going, might be 2040.
Sounds like a race to the finish line.
Well,
now,
let's see.
Sleepers and Wingtips.
You know, maybe we could do a Sleepers house party performance.
Oh,
would you be into that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So every once in a while, we have a band come and, you know, play here at the house down here in Virginia.
Yep.
How about Sleepers?
Love to.
Okay.
Anytime.
All right, I'll talk to you about that. Let's make that happen.
I would love to make that happen.
All right, this is great. This has been a lot of fun.
Yes.
It has. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate the time.
And
thank you, John, for everything.
I like that John, when he edits our episodes, often will make little comments, too, on the Slack that we have.
That's fantastic.
Like,
that's
for
fabulous.
Instance, he learned about Come On Feel the Noise recently.
Yeah,
right?
No idea. I felt like an idiot. But I got to tell you, I think I like Quiet Riot's version a little bit better.
It's
I really like that version.
Well, what I noticed when you compare the two versions is the Slade version has more of that kind of boogie to it, right?
Yeah.
It has that almost that T-Rex-ish kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Quiet Riot one is just more kind of straight on, four beats per measure kind of, you know, rock, you know, very straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, cool. Thanks very much, John. Thanks for all you do.
My pleasure, guys. Keep
great
up the good
work. I hope all the listeners appreciate all the work that all of our interns do to get this thing out.
Seriously.
How often?
Every day.
Every day.
There you go.
I missed it. Sorry.
It's all right. And here, you can try this one, John. So if people want to call and talk about anything that we talk about on the show and comment on Frank Zappa or anything else, Eric Clapton, what have you, you can call and leave a message. The number is
612-440-1984.
Very good.
That's beautiful.
Very good.
We got to save that.
Yeah,
now we have a new little jingle.
That's right.
Right. All right. That was wonderful. Are you the singer in the band?
I am.
Yeah. See, nice. There you go. Yeah. Beautiful voice.
That just kind of happened by default. I was just the only guy that was willing to do it.
You can also email rock@suburbspod.com, or you can hit us up Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. All right. What should we play out with here? Got any suggestions, John?
Well, I think I'm going to have to pick a track from that Frank Zappa album we were talking about, yep. Live at the Roxy.
All right. Well, since you're going to edit this episode, you can just surprise us.
I will. I will enjoy.
All right. Sounds good. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
I'm intern Sam.
And I'm intern John.
Thanks again, John. And thanks, John. To everyone else, we'll talk to you guys later. All right, cool. Thank you.
That was awesome, John.
Thank you. That was fantastic.
Wingtip Sloat stuff is on the way. I got so many CDs in my basement.